You are not the first to pass this way, nor shall you be the last.
We need an energy boost.
The brain, it works on electrical impulse.
How do we get there?
WDW Radio, your information station.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to WDW Radio, your home and guide for all things Disney parks and experiences around the world. I am Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 820. And for nearly 20 years, we've been sharing our love of Disney together here through the podcast, my live video every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, blogs, group events, and so much more. And whether you've been here since the beginning or this is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember, you are part of this incredible Disney family and community. Everything you need is over at www.radio.com. And this week, I want to know, are you in or are you out? Because we're diving into some of Disney's most debated topics, from the parks to the movies, Disney Cruise Line, and beyond. Join us as we talk about the Disney treasure, IP in the parks, who can, will, or did save Marvel, the most exciting Walt Disney World attractions, and what would Walt think? And do you agree with our takes? Be part of the discussions and debates and share your thoughts in the WW Radio Clubhouse at wwradio.com/clubhouse. Then stay tuned for our Disney Trivia Question of the Week. And if you want to stay connected and never miss an update, be sure to sign up for my free weekly email newsletter, where you not only get the latest news, exclusive content, but you also can download a free copy of my book, 102 Things to Do at Least Once in Walt Disney World. And let's connect. Follow and chat with me on social. I am at Lou Mangiello on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And if you're looking for a speaker for your event, conference, or business, or if you are a creator or solopreneur ready to turn your passion into your profession, visit loumangiello.com. Whether you need a keynote speaker or proven strategies to take your ideas and business to the next level, I'm here to help you transform what you love into what you do. And if you like what you hear, and I hope that you do, please share the show and tell a friend. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the WDW Radio Show. Welcome back, my friend, to another installment of In or Out. This is the segment where we share our Disney opinions, spark some fun debates, and maybe even challenge the way we think about our favorites, all in good fun, of course. Because I think one of the things that makes Disney so special is that while we all share a love for the magic, we don't necessarily always see eye to eye on all the details. And if you've ever ventured into a Disney discussion online somewhere, you know that the opinions are plentiful and passionate. It's like, it's as passionate as the guests who are rope-dropping Flight of Passage on Christmas morning. So tonight, we are going to crank up the conversation and dive right in to the debate as we tackle some of the fun, potentially slightly controversial, and sure to spark some lively discussion, Disney topics, in or out. Here's how it's going to work. I am going to make a statement. You're going to tell me whether you agree, whether you're in, or whether you're out, and then you'll have 30 seconds-ish to defend your stance, argue your case, or just passionately yell about why you are right. And when I say you, it means I cannot do this alone. Joining me on the wild ride tonight are two very special guests who may already be regretting their decision to say yes. First, ladies first, we have the one and only travel princess herself, my good friend, longtime partner in crime, owner of Mousefan Travel, and someone who most definitely has her own opinions. She is Becky Mankin.
So I'm somewhat terrified about all this because this is like the perfect storm for a Libra. I will be able to argue both sides of anything, and I won't be able to pick just one. So I think this may be bad casting, but let's see what happens.
Right. Well, listen, I was a trial attorney in my past life, you remember? So that's what I was taught to do, be able to argue both sides, but hopefully we're going to stick to one or the other.
Good luck with that.
First time on the show, Fresh from the WW Radio cruise on the Disney Treasure and the WW Radio Nation is, we also did a Marvel cruise together. Longtime Disney fan, we'll find out just how much tonight. Fellow Marvel, Star Wars, and tech nerd, my friend Gary Witt from The Nation, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me. I'm also terrified to be on this episode because the last time I listened to one of these, I was in my car listening to my radio and shouting, "What? How could you possibly be in? That's obviously out." And then hearing the other argument and switching my opinion. So I agree with Becky. A lot of these are, it depends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys had no idea what you were walking into tonight, did you?
No. But that's okay. It's because maybe there's just no argument. Maybe it's just like, I believe this and be done with it. Right.
I just checked on the Hard Rock Bet site, and the over-under on how many of us are going to agree on every single one is very, very, very low. So
fantastic.
You, our friend who is listening at home, I want to hear your thoughts. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Are you in or out? Do you have your own hot takes? Let me know in the clubhouse over at www.radio.com/clubhouse, or better yet, hit pause, call the voicemail as it's happening, 407-900-9391, and I will play it on the air. All right, let us get the discussion and the debate rolling. Becky, always ladies first.
I knew you were going to do that to me.
Of course, I have to. The chivalry is not. I am gonna plant my flag in that chivalry mountain and defend it as long as I can. I know exactly where to get started, and we're going to see right off the bat whether you and then Gary are in or out. 30 seconds to defend your answer. I know there may be some recency bias on this. However, the Disney Treasure is the best of the ships in the Disney Cruise Line fleet. Are you in or are you out?
I need some clarification here. Is it best? Are you saying overall? Is it best for groups? Is it best for families? Is it best for... Clarify me.
I am reading off the cards from the accounting firm, and it says it is intentionally vague. But you're wasting your 30 seconds.
Yeah, I know. All right. I will say, I'm going to say I'm in from a Disney fan perspective, because the IP is so rich, the entertainment value with Moana on board, the Haunted Mansion Lounge. When you first walk in, that atrium is just so inviting, and the colors are amazing. The entertainment from Sage and Coleander, right? Wherever they are, they show up at different points in times. And like, remember, right after dinner, they were just hanging out and you could approach them and talk to them. You don't see a lot of that on the other ships. So I am going to go in on this. Plus, obviously, if you're concierge, I love the concierge lounge. It's huge. It has a second level and you can get Dole Whips. So I'm in.
Dr. Gary, are you in or are you out?
Well, this one's easy. I am 100% in on this Disney Treasure being the best ship in the fleet. I've been lucky enough to sail all six so far. I had a predilection towards the bigger ships anyway. I was always a fan of the Dream and the Fantasy over the Magic and the Wonder. When I left the Wish last year after a four-night cruise, I thought that that was my favorite ship at that time, which I know is probably controversial. You guys may not be as big of a fan of the Wish as I am. But after spending seven nights on the Treasure, I have no doubt that that has superseded the Wish and it's in my favorite spot. I agree with Becky. The park IP theme spaces, the atrium, the colors, the theming, the details. The things that people usually knock this class of ship for, the lack of a running track, I don't really care about that. The weird elevators, I agree that's weird. I don't miss the midship elevators. I do think it's weird how only half of the elevators go to the 13th floor and the other two go to the 11th deck, but I can take two flights of stairs. I think that the theming, the Easter eggs, the details, and just the overall experiences, and then in combination, and this is probably the number one factor I think that puts it over the edge, the live entertainment, at least on our cruise, was far and away superior to what I've experienced on the other Disney cruise ships. And then the last point I'll make is that the one caveat here is that I think itinerary and number of nights on the ship makes such a huge difference in your experience. Mm-hmm. So having the Treasure be a 7-night sailing just makes me enjoy it that much more. But I'm definitely in on that.
Do we get rebuttals on this too? Just, I want to check the rules. Wow, oh, man. See, because I was just going to add, because the elevators are a factor on every single one of the ships. Those elevators everywhere are teeny tiny. So I'm not exactly sure why that would matter through all six, but yeah. But the small spaces also are that knockdown. But I agree.
So the question is, am I in or am I out? And my answer is yes. Yes, I am both in and out.
Wait a minute. It was not part of the rule.
My game, my rules. Because I can.
Fine,
Mangiello. And I think that I have, again, I think that I have some or a lot of recency bias having just come off. I fell in love with the ship very quickly on the preview cruise. And I said, okay, I'm just overly excited because it's new. But then we just did our group and we were there for 7 days. And I agree with every single thing that you said, including but not limited to Gary, the running track not mattering to me whatsoever. However, it is the warmth. It is the colors. It is the storytelling. It is the placemaking. I will die on the hill at the Haunted Mansion Parlor is the single best placemaking I think Disney has ever done anywhere, because you don't feel like you are in a space that was inspired by the Haunted Mansion. You feel as though you are sitting in the Haunted Mansion, as if they took that parlor, they picked it up from Magic Kingdom, and they plopped it right into that cruise ship. I agree about the itineraries. To a certain degree, I don't care where we go because I loved that ship so much. However, while I do think that for me, the storytelling and many of those things overcome what I consider relative deficiencies on the Wish, there are aspects of other ships that I enjoy more. I do like having the adult district in its own section, not because I don't like to gatekeep from children. I mean, Becky wants physical gates in the adult district. However,
here we go.
I do like having that area where it's very easy to bounce around in between spaces, like to find people or just to have different types of experiences, but still be in the same relatively confined area, as opposed to having to jump from Periscope Pub down to Sarabi, then go to the Haunted Mansion Parlor, or then go look in Scat Cat. I love the spaces. I almost wish that they were more together. And I think too, and this is where I sort of fly in the face of what I just said, I love the Wonder because I love that the Wonder goes to Alaska. I love the Wonder because I love the Promenade Lounge. I love the Wonder because I love the smaller size. So my very long, longer than 30 second, completely an answer that flies in the face of the rules is that, yes, I am both in and out. So let's
all
move
right.
on. Let's
wait, move. Wait, time out for a second, because now we know how
you
this is going to roll.
You wonder why these shows go so long, Becky. I'm trying to keep it tight.
Because there was no rule set up of, you could say, and yes, both. So now that I know that, we'll see where
that's
we can
not a rule.
That.
It's an exception that I've carved out purely for myself.
It's a lube rule.
Wait. It's a loophole. It's a loophole.
It's a loophole.
Great.
All right.
Nice, yeah, it's gone.
Gary, this is for you first. More non-IP, non-intellectual property-based original attractions like Expedition Everest should be added to the Disney parks. Are you in or are you out?
Oh, I'm definitely in on should they be added to the parks. If you're asking, will they be added to the parks? I guess that's another question. But in terms of should they be added to the parks, thinking about the attractions that we enjoy the most and experience going around the parks, I would say that the non-IP ones, the historic ones, the Carousel of Progress, the People Mover, as you mentioned, the attractions that are not IP, that have their own backstory. When you have an attraction that is strong enough on its own to eventually inspire a film, then I would say that that attraction has a backstory strong enough on its own to hold its own water. Not that I don't appreciate the IP content, but seeing the occasional new attraction that has its own backstory, its own creative story, and is built from scratch, I think would definitely be refreshing.
Yeah. So, I appreciate the IP. I certainly do, because obviously it does bring in those younger families that have seen the movies before they go. However, I'm going to go to the complete side that Gary, you just did, because for me, the legacy of the attractions that I love so much aren't IP. So the Haunted Mansion, the Jungle Cruise, and in front of us, the things that could possibly spin off from things like the SEA, which I keep waiting for them to do something with that. I think that while it's great to have IP, it's great to have something that you identify with, I adore the creativity and the storytelling that the Imagineers can do on their own. And I really am attracted to and connected with most of the rides that aren't IP. So I'm going to say in.
We are in complete agreement on this.
Ooh, what? Are we keeping score just in case?
God, I hope not, because I agree. And look, we know Disney can do it. They've done it before, not just with things like that. I think Mystic Manor is the perfect example of a non-IP-based attraction that is arguably, and who knows, this might be an in and out question, one could argue it is the single greatest attraction in a Disney park, period. I also agree with you that they are building their own IP inside the parks. The IP does not need to come from the big or small screens or from other, you know, story-making places. I think they are building their own IP in the park. I think the SEA is the ideal foundation. And I think over the past number of years, it is starting to become something more. People are becoming more aware of it, sort of like in the Disney zeitgeist, right? What this SEA is. We're seeing little dribs and drabs of it. And I think as the things that we're expecting to see, we've heard about a Disney Plus show. We've heard about more SEA in the parks. We've heard about comic books, all these different things. I think you are building this foundation of, you know, SEA connected universe, right? The SEACU that you can build more attractions on. Because like I said, I think they can do it, but to your point, these, and this is the wrong word, no name, right? When I say no name, no brand name attractions are not necessarily going to be the thing that is going to attract the family that has not visited in 4 or 5 years to say, hey, we need to book a trip to Disney. When you build a Cars-themed land in Magic Kingdom, that is, like it or not, argue either way, that is going to be the thing that's going to bring people who have not come to a Disney park in 5 years or maybe ever to the parks, because that is going to be that shining North Star that kids and adults are going to want to go and see. But we're in agreement nonetheless.
I was going to add, thinking about this, if we talk about the best non-IP attraction to come to the parks, the thing that is missing, I think, more than anything, is a reimagination of Journey into Imagination with Figment. It is time to update that attraction. That's a non-IP based character, and he's the mascot of the park. If you go, you can't walk through the Flower and Garden Festival without seeing Figment everywhere in Festival of the Arts. So that would be a great place for the Imagineers to start and bring that attraction up to par and back to where it once was.
Well, Gary, I've been saying this for years. Eventually, I'm going to be right, you know, because I think with like the handwriting's been on the wall in terms of what the post-show area looks like. Just there's things that are indicators, which, and it's why every D23, I'm like, this is it. This is the one. This year, I'm going to say it again. It's going to be Destination D. We're finally going to get the announcement. It's going to happen eventually. And I'm wondering what is taking so long, because it will, and I think part of the issue might be too, it will be a huge guest satisfier for the nostalgic and sentimental fans. Will it be something that is going to attract that, you know, metaphorical family from the Midwest that hasn't come in years? Maybe that's potentially part of why other things have taken precedence over the reimagining of Figment.
It's just a weird disconnect.
I want to go back really quickly to your flag in the ground of Mystic Manor being the best attraction for a second, because I want to say I'm out on that one, because I'm going to put up Pirates of the Caribbean in China for that one, because still, I believe that was the best attraction I have ever been on. Plus, Pirates of the Caribbean, another non-IP, which actually became IP because it ended up being a movie like Haunted Mansion. Okay, maybe it wasn't that great, but still. These wonderful attractions and the creativity from the Imagineers created these wonderful experiences like Mystic Manor, but that's second to me as Pirates of the Caribbean is first.
Becky, don't say a word.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Gary, is it Pirates of the Caribbean or Pirates of the Caribbean?
It's Pirates of the Caribbean, but if you go to the body of water, it's the Caribbean.
There you go. There, yeah. Moving on. You are correct, sir. Ding, like if I had a bell, I'd be ringing the ding.
That is
ding,
the
ding,
only
ding,
right
bell.
Answer.
Okay.
Caribbean. Always, every time. There's, you want to debate that one for a while? Okay, let's go.
All right. Let's, we've talked a little about some of the things in the parks. We've talked about some of the IP. Let's go from the Magic Kingdom to the movies. Deadpool and Wolverine didn't, quote unquote, save Marvel, but Daredevil can. Becky, you first.
Oh, boy. All right. My Libra's going to show here because I know how much you love Daredevil, so I know where you're going there. I think that Deadpool and Wolverine did a great job of re-elevating the Marvel brand after it had had some questionable choices along the way over the past few years, including Thor Love and Thunder, which, you know how much I love Thor, and I really didn't like that movie, which was really, really painful to me on so many levels. But I'm going to go out on you on that one, because I think that Deadpool and Wolverine would... Okay. See, this is why this is a bad idea for me, because I could sit here and go back and forth constantly and argue both sides really easily.
Are you
but...
in... Or are you out?
I'm going to put Deadpool and Wolverine over, so I'm going to say I'm out.
Gary?
Oh, man. This one's tough for me. I so want to be able to say in. I so want to have the enthusiasm and the feelings and the excitement that I had back in the Infinity War and Endgame era. But if I'm being realistic and honest with myself, I think I'm going to say out. And I would say out on either of those films, reinvigorating the Marvel franchise. I definitely enjoyed Deadpool and Wolverine. Don't get me wrong. I walked out of there thoroughly satisfied, but I did not walk out of there thinking this is the resurgence of a new canon of an era of Marvel that's going to spark a series of films over the next 5 years that I'm going to be there on opening night for. Will Daredevil do that? That remains to be seen. But as much as Lou loves Daredevil and I love Daredevil, does Daredevil have the mass appeal coming from the basis of a Disney Plus show on that streaming platform to reinvigorate the cinema experience with Marvel? I have to honestly say that I doubt it. And it's depressing, but that's what I have to say. I mean, we've gone from, and you mentioned this recently, Lou, somewhere, we've gone from never missing a Marvel film, if not on opening night, then the next day, opening weekend for sure, to now I have to talk my 18 and 23-year-old sons into going to the movies with me for a Marvel film. They're really not into it. They're not that interested. So there's a long way to go to recapture that previous magic, and I'm not sure that Daredevil's going to do that.
I thought about this prompt a lot, and I changed it a number of times, and I was very intentional about a couple of things. In one, choosing Deadpool and Wolverine as opposed to the more recent MCU release, and choosing Daredevil in terms of, is this going to be the thing? Because as excited as I am for it, and as in the time of this recording, we are just 2 days before the premiere of Daredevil Born Again, I'm finishing my rewatch of the Netflix Daredevil series, which is on Disney Plus, which now more than ever, the Daredevil series is, when I say it's the most watchable, what I mean by that is It is the series that I find I cannot do something else while I watch it. I need to be so present and have both eyes on the screen as opposed to looking at email or a second screen on my phone, because the acting, the dialogue, the visuals, the small little idiosyncratic movements of Vincent D'Onofrio are just so well done. I want to be fully immersed in it. That being said, the Netflix Daredevil series and what we were expecting to see from Daredevil Born Again on Disney Plus coming out on March 4th is going to be more of the same and maybe even turned up to 11. It is very dark. It is very, very adult. It is very gritty. It is very, very violent, meaning it is not for everyone and certainly not for young kids. Everybody parent your own way. But my recommendation is it is not for young kids. So it is not the thing that you are going to necessarily run and grab your seven-year-old and go, hey, the new episode of Daredevil Born Again just dropped. I talked about it a little bit on the live show. If not, maybe we'll do it this week. To your point, Gary, I just saw Captain America, Brave New World.
I haven't even seen it yet.
Right. I haven't either.
That's the point. I used to be the person, I was like counting down until midnight to get my tickets for opening night, usually buying sometimes three days worth of tickets to go with my son to see it multiple times. Because the first one, it's overwhelming. You take it all in. You go see it again so you don't miss a thing. You go again to try and pick up the Easter eggs. We waited a while. I am disappointed to admit, because we're all friends here, like I actually like closed my eyes a couple of times. I did not think it lives up to the standards that were set years ago, to your point, in the Infinity Endgame era, even going back to the early Iron Mans and First Avengers and some of the other, even the early Thor. It did not live up to that standard. And I think, and without spoiling anything, because we've seen it, I think there was such a lack of confidence from Marvel in this film, and I think rightly so, that they gave away the best part. Showing the Red Hulk in the trailer gave away the reveal. There was no sort of moment of like gravitas or like, wow, like hitting my son, like, oh my God, this thing just happened. I think that there was wasted characters. I think wasted actors. I think Giancarlo Esposito's pseudo like villain was wasted on the film. So I'm happy that I have this feeling again for Daredevil, and my excitement level is super high for what this is. But understanding, one, it's not for everyone, and two, it's not on the big screen. Let's see what happens when Thunderbolts comes out later on.
Yeah, I'm more excited to see Thunderbolts at this point than I have been for Captain America. And I'm like you. For the longest time, I was waiting for that next Marvel movie to come out. I was ready to buy tickets the moment that they came available. If it was going to be on a ship, I would be in that theater when it comes out on the ship. It came out on the ship that we were on. And it was like, it's midnight. I didn't even have a drive to see it. And I still haven't seen it. It's been out for a while.
That speaks volumes, Becky. Yeah. Right? It speaks volumes. You haven't seen it yet.
Exactly. And I feel like I've seen, from the way the trailer was fed out to us in three or four different versions, I feel like I saw the entire movie in the trailers. So
you did.
I'm not driven to go see the rest of the content, because I feel like I got the college abridged bulleted version and I know what happens.
I'm disappointed that I feel it did not advance the MCU in any way. It filled in some gaps. It paid some fan service for those who made it through the Incredible Hulk, lo those many years ago. But I don't think it did anything to sort of lift the whole MCU. And who knows, maybe down the line, it will pay dividends in something that will connect the dots
like
elsewhere.
Like you mentioned, with Daredevil, I had to finish season 3, so I knew what was going on. And I even messaged you and said, da-da-da-da-da, about a certain character. And you said, oh, make sure to go back and see Defenders. Guess what I did all day? I watched all of the Defenders season, and I'm excited for Tuesday. So I have that feeling again, but not on a movie level. But from Disney Plus is of course served up some duds, but it's also served up Agatha and And of course, this, and I'm a fan, and I'm excited about it. And this is what I missed. I missed this internal feeling of, I can't wait to text my friends after the first episode and go, oh my gosh, can you believe this is happening? Or what do you think is going on? Or what is this character? That's what I miss.
The way we used to do with things like WandaVision.
Right.
Yep. We were looking forward to have those water cooler conversations, messaging each other after the episodes drop. And I think, and I've said this before, I think my interpretation of it is when Disney has confidence in a Disney Plus project, they release it weekly, right? They release it episodically. When they don't, they do what they did with Echo, which is they just release it all at once, binge it, get out of the way, and forget it and move on. I think, and look, they're already shooting Daredevil season two. So I think that shows the confidence that they have in the project.
I will say too, we've definitely, and I had to remind myself of this watching one of those, you know, new rock stars YouTube summaries of reminding myself of the prior Daredevil seasons. But we've been seeing Matt Murdock cameos interlaced throughout these Marvel films for quite a while, including Spider-Man No Way Home. And there was a cameo in She-Hulk. And there was a cameo in Hawkeye as well. Of Vincent D'Onofrio. So that gives me hope that maybe there's an integrated plan. And that's what we missed, right? We missed the integrated plan. We missed the one film leading to the next and then the callbacks and the Easter eggs and the universe being all interrelated. And what we don't miss is the multiverse. So I think the more we can move away from the multiverse and back to a single interconnected universe, the better for Marvel.
And knowing that the tag of the movie that you're watching is actually going to continue the story, because so many tags that we got, the post-credit scenes, have gone nowhere. So I would like to see that again. But getting back to the initial question about Deadpool and Wolverine, I see so much of where the future is going to go with those characters, because it's going to start tying into the mutant side of things, which I think that is very exciting to people. I hope they don't screw it up. That's where I think the future might be going.
Who would have ever thought, I keep repeating, who would have ever thought 5 years ago when we walked out of Endowit game, we'd be going, you know, 5 years from now, I really hope they don't screw this up. Like that's
true.
The pendulum has swung very, very far to the other side, and hopefully we're starting to see the swing back. All right, let's move on. Let's go back to the parks. We'll do a couple more of these. Let's go back to Walt Disney World, and let's talk about some of the attractions. Are you in or are you out? I think, Gary, you're first on this one. Tron Light Cycle Run is the most exciting new attraction built in Walt Disney World in the last 5 to 7 years. Are you in or are you out?
Again, this is a softball for me. I'm 100% out. And that is not because I don't like the Tron attraction, because I love that attraction. And I think that the launch sequence on the Tron attraction, especially if you're able to ride the attraction at night and you have that illuminated canopy alternating from blue to orange, and you come out of that tunnel and soar up towards that canopy and then dive into the interior portion of the ride, that experience is amazing. But the reason that I'm out is that I don't think that it holds a candle to Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind in Epcot. And I'm going to put that on my, I'm going to plant my flag that is the most thrilling attraction that's been released in the last 5 or 10 years. And that's currently my favorite attraction in Walt Disney World. If I had 1 hour in Disney and had one attraction to choose to ride, that would be it. And I just feel like Cosmic Rewind really nailed that sense of simulating space flight through an environment without gravity. And you know, unlike Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, where the swinging cars may have kind of taken away from some of the thrill of the turns, with Cosmic Rewind, the way those cars spin and rotate really was the way they programmed that to give you that sense of free fall and kind of effortless motion through space makes that far superior in my mind, as does the, and I don't know exactly what it is, but I would estimate a 3 minute runtime as opposed to a 45 or 50 second runtime. So I'll take Guardians of the Galaxy over Tron.
Okay, so out without even, no question. But it's not, again, like Gary said, it's not because I don't like Tron. It's a fun experience. It's unique. But the runtime's a big deal. But there's no story. I don't feel like there's a story that you're walking into and being immersed in. You're just going in, you see the really cool colors, you get on a light cycle, you go yay for 30 seconds and you're done and you want to go again, but they may or may not, you know, allow you to do that. I'm with Gary. I think Cosmic Rewind is actually the most exciting, thrilling attraction that Walt Disney World has produced in just the past few years. And it comes on several levels, not only because it's got that coaster feel, but it has a story. From the moment you walk into the queue, you are immersed in what's happening around you and you get to connect with the characters that you love from Guardians of the Galaxy. And then you walk into the different holding areas that you have different micro experiences before you get on the major ride. So I think that that delivers on so many more levels than Tron does, even at night when it's cool, the lights are out and it's kind of like, you know, riding the People Mover at night. It's better at night. You see the lights, but that doesn't make for excitement to me. So I'm out and I'm going for Guardians 2.
There was an absolute method to my madness with this question, because really what I was trying to get to, because if you think about it in terms of what other quote-unquote exciting attractions that have opened in the last number of years, there's not really a ton, right? Remy's, I wouldn't call Remy's Ratatouille mm-hmm. Adventure necessarily an exciting attraction. You know, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge has been open, you know, for, it, we're coming up on 6 years this year. You got Runaway Crazy. Railway, etc. The question really, just very quickly, do we want or need more thrilling and exciting attractions in the parks? Or do we want or need more story-based attractions that anyone and everyone can ride and enjoy?
Yes and yes. Can we have both?
Right, I guess it shouldn't be mutually exclusive. Right, it shouldn't be mutually exclusive.
I mean, we go to Disney instead of Six Flags because we want the story, right? That's the difference. It's the storytelling and the theming of Disney that sets it apart from other quote-unquote amusement parks. I had this discussion with Navi River Journey at Animal Kingdom all the time. It's a beautiful attraction and I love riding through it. I love the sights and the sounds, but it has no story. And so you kind of walk off of that attraction saying, what just happened other than a river cruise down the jungle? But I wasn't advanced anywhere. I wasn't taken anywhere. There wasn't any emotional connection. And so I guess if I had to choose between the two, I would say more storytelling than thrills, but just like Guardians of the Galaxy or like Rise of the Resistance, which now that I think about it, I might have to put up there pretty similarly to Cosmic Rewind as the most thrilling attraction. You can have both.
I think you need both because exciting and thrilling is going to mean different things to different people. And if you're trying to attract those younger families, if you're trying to attract the families that have a 7-year-old and the families that have a 15-year-old, they're going to need different attractions and different things, right, to pull them in and keep their attention and make it exciting for them. So I think you do need both. You do need story and you do need thrills, because otherwise you're just going to go to Six Flags or you're just going to go to Universal Studios. But of course, they're getting better at story themselves. So, yeah, I think you need both.
I have one final question, one final prompt, and I'm trying to decide between two, because there are two pretty big ones.
Oh, do them both.
No, yeah, I can't.
Why not?
No, I got to save one.
Oh, we
want to
be challenged.
We have talked about the parks. We have talked about the movies. We have talked about Disney Cruise Line. We've talked about the attractions. We've talked about thrills. We've talked about story and all these things. They come back to a single person. Are you in or are you out? Walt Disney would be very happy if he saw the parks today.
Oh, you're so evil.
Are you in or are you out? Becky, you are
don't
first.
Don't throw this at me first.
Well, Gary went last first last time. So.
All right. So, all right, in and out, all right, only so I don't get bad emails. So the in part I'm going to say is because I think he was such an innovator And to see the technology and to see how it was applied in a theme park setting that expanded the experience that he was initially going for, right? He was going for a place that he could take his family. They could enjoy things together. The adults could be kids with their kids. The thing that drives me crazy all the time, quick sidebar, you get the people who are like, Walt would be rolling in his grave if he saw all these sponsors. It's like, well, dude, Disneyland was full of sponsors. That's what Main Street was. They sold insurance there. So for me, it just kind of goes along those lines. Sorry.
They sold bras. Sold bras, not insurance.
But I was going to go with the bras direction, but I thought you would look at me funny. So, okay, they sold bras on the street. But again, I think that people trying to put thoughts in a man's head that unfortunately has not been with us for so many years is kind of unfair. And I think that if he was able to look at the accomplishments and the families and the faces that walk in and experience the parks now, whether it's on a thrilling ride or while it's on one of the classics that's still there since he was there, or just families having popcorn, watching fireworks. I'm going to go in and say, yes, I think he would be proud of what he sees. Now, on the out part is probably, everybody yelling and screaming about prices and all the things that a corporation has to do to survive. Okay, I could see where that could be a problem. However, from just the pure basic ground level of what he would think about families and how they enjoy the parks now and where technology has taken it from the beginnings of what he did with technology to bring an experience alive, I'm going to say in.
I'm going to respond as well. And Gary, I'm going to give you a chance. I do want to say one thing, lest we be confused about one thing that you mentioned. Walt was also in the business of making a lot of money.
Exactly.
I think people are like, Walt wouldn't want it this way. I'm like, no, I think Walt would be very happy when he saw the bottom line books of what, you know, the profits that the company make. I mean, he got into this for the love of what he did, but, you know, he also wanted to, quote unquote, you know, feed his extended family as well. Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm in on this one for sure. You did a show previously, and I don't remember the title, but you talked about where would you take Walt if you could bring him back now? What attraction would you take him on? What restaurant would you take him on? And I mean, just trying to imagine Walt experiencing the attractions we've just talked about in the last 10 minutes, Cosmic Rewind or Tron or Rise of the Resistance, and how mind-blowing those experiences would be. But really, I mean, at the core of this, Walt wanted to build a place where families could spend time together. And I think Disney World still absolutely excels in that aspect. I mean, I am undoubtedly the quote unquote Disney guy where I work in rural Colorado. Every time I hear someone go and come back from Disney World, they talk about how many amazing memories are made with their family. Walt wanted to focus on storytelling. And we've talked about during this discussion already, there's nowhere else that you can go and be immersed in a story from beginning to end while riding a roller coaster or a boat ride. Walt wanted the blessing of size, which is why he chose this location in the middle of nowhere in Central Florida. And look what the corporation has done with it over the last 50 something years now, with four parks and two theme parks. And I don't know how many dozens of resort hotels and the number of tens of thousands of guests that come every day. So is the operation a completely different scale than it was in the 50s and 60s? Yeah, sure. Are prices different and the cost, you know, has it gone up more than inflation? Yeah, sure. But I think that's more of a cultural change than anything else. I mean, Disney's darned if they do and darned if they don't, right? If the prices weren't as high as they were, the crowding situation would be 10 times worse than it already is. So there's a lose-lose situation. So, with the success of the company, with the expansion of the theme parks, with the number of, just the straight up number of people that get to experience Disney World on a given day. And like Becky said, to sit on Main Street and watch a family experience happily ever after for the first time, I think Walt would be, I think there'd be tears running down his face.
I can see Becky feverishly asking ChatGPT, is Walt happy with Walt Disney World? I can hear him clacking on keyboard.
I'm
asking
looking
Claude,
up something.
What does Walt think?
Wow. No, not quite.
ChatGPT. Assume you are in heaven and sitting next to Walt Disney having chili. Ask him what he thinks of. All right.
No, I wanted to look up something and I had to see what companies were on Main Street. And yes, there was an insurance company selling insurance. That's what I was looking
at. Every kid can pick a souvenir. Dad, I really want a full the term life policy before I leave the park.
Fantasyland was based on IP, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Pinocchio and Alice in Wonderland and, I mean, Peter Pan, and those were all IP-based attractions. So it's an interesting complaint to hear that now when that's essentially how Disneyland was founded.
Yeah. And look, I love this because it does spark such interesting discussion and debate among fans and Disney historians. I think if you walked into, even sort of specifically say Walt Disney World, but sort of with a full knowledge of where the parks and resorts are now, I think this reaction would be a mix of pride and amazement and happiness. Maybe there's a little frustration in there, because again, I think there are reasons why he would be happy, right? There are the technological advancements. He was always pushing for innovation. Look at the things we just talked about. Light Cycle Run, Guardians of the Galaxy, showcasing this cutting edge storytelling and technology that really sort of in line with his vision.
Animatronics. Can you imagine that?
Right. I want Walt to go look at his own animatronic later on this year. Let him see what he thinks, right? That's going to be we're going to revisit this question this summer. Epcot, I think, is interesting because while it's not the community of tomorrow that he, and it's seemingly only he, was able to envision and have the answers to, I think the new Epcot, he could look at a couple, it has that same sense of optimism and inspiring future with different types of energy that maybe he was expecting. I think he would love this idea of theming and immersion, right? We talk about Fantasyland, Gary, like he wanted guests to feel like they were completely transported, and places like Galaxy's Edge and Pandora and even Toy Story Land shows a level of immersion that I think goes beyond what was possible for Walt and his Imagineers at his time. And I think just from a 30,000 foot view, I think the global impact that Disney and the parks have had, and the phenomenon that has become, the level of storytelling, entertainment, and experiences are available today far surpasses what was available in the 50s and 60s. However, being the trial attorney that I am, there is another side of the coin. There might be a side of Walt that would be disappointed. Right? I talked about, yes, I do believe, Walt and the Disney company has always been in the business of, yes, making magic, but also making a little bit of change on the side. Would he be disappointed with, and again, I'm not saying I agree with this, I'm playing pure devil's advocate. Would he sort of feel that there was a little sense of commercialization over creativity? I think he was a businessman, yes, but he prioritized storytelling over profit making, right? At least that's how sort of the sense that we get of Uncle Walt. Would he look at Epcot and say, well, wait a minute, I wanted Epcot to be this place of education, and now it is more of a place of intellectual property? When it originally opened, it had such a strong sense of education and culture, and now it really is more of focused on character-driven experiences. Is that a departure from what Walt's goals and vision were? There's only one person that knows, and it's Walt. Would Walt be sad about some of the attraction that his fingerprints were all over not being around anymore? Whether it's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or just other great storytelling attractions. Like, I still, sort of lament the loss of things like the Great Movie Ride. All right, I understand the reasons why, but I lament the loss of things like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. But my very longer than 30-second answer is, I think Walt would be very proud of what the parks have become, especially in terms of innovation and storytelling. And I think, I don't remember which one of you said it. Maybe it was you, Gary. This idea of a place that families could have fun together, that you can forget about the real world. You step into this world of fantasy and yesterday and tomorrow and leave everything else behind. And I think now more than ever, the parks really do still, for all of its, you know, issues or whatever that and complaints that are understandable that people may have, I still think that's what that place is. And I know for me, when I step in a Magic Kingdom, when I step on a Disney Cruise Line ship, when I still have that feeling. I still get a little choked up. I still get that little sort of nostalgic 7-year-old giddiness. And I think, you know, those of us that love Disney as much as we do still feel that way. And I think that's exactly, to quote my mom many years ago, that's what Walt wanted.
I'd like to think that he wouldn't be upset by seeing things changed. I mean, who knows? But that was one of his mantras, right? Things are always changing. Disneyland is never complete. It'll always be changing and evolving and growing. The more I think about it, the one thing that I might point out as something that Walt might see and kind of raise his eyebrow about would be the current FastPass system. And I say that because ever since it's become kind of cost-based, I always get uncomfortable that it creates a different experience for folks who attend the park based on their ability to pay with Lightning Lane and Premier Passes and whatnot. And I'm not sure what Walt would have said about that.
Yeah, it depends on what
he might feel one way, and then the accountants are going to look how much money we made today.
Yeah.
Becky, any final thoughts on Walt?
Yeah, it's that coming back to how I feel when I go to the park, and I think that's exactly what he wanted. When I walk in, I turn back into an 8-year-old most of the times, and I have that emotion tied to not having a care in the world and having the real world of all the things and responsibilities that we have for at least a few hours can disappear. And when you watch people, when you sit on a bench, I got that to do this in Disneyland just a couple of days ago, where you just sit on a bench and watch these families, and mom and dad have all these responsibilities, but they're holding hands with their kids and they're skipping through the park and they're running up to get popcorn and they're grabbing popcorn and sitting down on the ground and giggling and laughing. And then the parade comes by. I mean, that's, I think, what he wanted. And I think that's what we still have.
I agree. And the person I want to hear from is you, not either to you, our friend that is sitting here listening, potentially screaming at your phone, at your car, whatever it might be. I would love to know from you what you would think, whether it is about Walt being happy if he saw the parks today or anything else that we talked about. Is the Disney Treasure the best of the ships in the fleet? Do you want more non-IP attractions in the parks? What or can or who did or will save Marvel? And what is the newest, the most exciting new attraction? And do we need more exciting attractions, or do we need more story-based attractions? There's a couple ways that you can let me and us know. Let's keep the conversation going over in the clubhouse, over at www.radio.com/clubhouse. Better yet, I'd love to hear from you. I want to play it on the air. Get emotional, get excited. Call the voicemail at 407-900-9391. Gary and Becky, thank you both so very much for being here. Gary, if anybody wants to connect with you online, where can they, or should they just not? Should they just not?
Not really. The only thing I'll put out there is that my wife and I do put out a few YouTube videos just as our own kind of passion project, hobby of ours, and that's at Lake City Adventures.
Awesome. I will link that in the show notes. Becky Mankin from Mouse Fan Travel. Hopefully, people are even more excited about going to the park, going on any or all of the Disney Cruise Line fleet. Tell them where they can find you and your incredible team of travel advisors.
You can find us at mousefantravel.com or mei-travel.com. And if you want to do a cruise, we have a self-booking engine at bookmeicruise.com. And you can find me at on all the socials at Becky Mankin.
I'll link to all that. Gary and I were just saying right before we went on, we need to go on another cruise. We have the Destiny coming up in February of 2026. I'm starting to feel like that's too far away. We'll talk
about that. Way too long.
Like, it is way too long.
Well, I know somebody that can help you with that. Just, putting it out there.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again for joining. This is always fun to get into these discussions and debates. Nobody got hurt. It didn't get crazy or violent, which would have been podcast gold, but I like it more.
I was a little bit more nervous about this one than email show. So if that tells you anything, so made it, survived. I should get in for this. I survived the In or Out t-shirt.
I will
add it to
merch
on this.
I'll add it to the merch store.
It's time for this week's Disney Trivia Challenge. So do you think you know your Disney magic? You could put your knowledge to the test with a question about Disney history, hidden details, or maybe a classic quote or sound from the parks. And if you answer correctly, you'll be entered to win a magical Disney prize package. And this week's trivia segment is once again brought to you by the most important part of WDW Radio, which is you. And by joining the WDW Radio Nation, you're not only helping to support the podcast and live shows and events, you're also becoming part of the magic that makes it all possible. And for as little as a dollar per month, you also unlock exclusive rewards like monthly scavenger hunts, group calls, private community, surprise packages, and more. And more importantly, your support helps power our Dream Team project, which has raised more than $550,000 to grant Make-A-Wish trips to children with life-threatening illnesses to Walt Disney World, bringing Disney magic to families who need it most. Come be part of something bigger, be part of the magic, and join us over at www.radio.com/support. I appreciate your love, support, friendship, and help. I love being able to give back to you each and every month. And quickly, I want to thank some new and longtime members of the Nation family, including Russell Boyce, David and Nancy Turner, Chris Blagg, and Daniel Roberts. And now, before we get to this week's trivia contest, let's go back, review last week's, and select our winner. So last week, I was joined by former Imagineer and all-around nice guy Jason Sorrell. We talked about his work on things like Pirates of the Caribbean and Haunted Mansion. And so your question was to tell me, what is the name of the ghostly bride in the attic of the Haunted Mansion, and how many husbands has she had? Thanks to so many of you who entered and had a lot of entries this week, and pretty much all of you got it right. She is, of course, Constance Hathaway, and she's had not one, not two, not three, but five husbands. Sometimes known as the Black Widow Bride, she is infamous for having married and subsequently murdered five husbands, as hinted by her sinister wedding portraits and some of the accompanying wedding gifts that you can find throughout the attic. And last week's winner, randomly selected, is Beth Forrester. So Beth, congratulations. I'll get your prize package out to you right away. And if you played last week and didn't win, that's okay, because here's your next chance to enter in this week's Walt Disney World Trivia Challenge. So this week was the Academy Awards in Hollywood, so I thought I would ask you, what Disney song was the very first to win an Academy Award for Best Original Song? What Disney song was the very first to win the Academy Award for Best Original Song? You have until Sunday, March 9th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern to go to www.radio.com. Click on this week's podcast, scroll down, you'll find the entry form there. And again, this week you're going to play for the WDW Radio keychain, stickers, pin, and a mystery prize. So good luck and have fun. Thank you so much for taking the time to tune in this and every week and for being part of the WDW Radio community and family. I am so grateful to and for you and your time and your friendship and support. Always remember, you are not a fan. You are a friend. Just a couple of quick reminders. You can still register to join us for the Walk for Wishes to benefit Make-A-Wish on Thursday, March 27th in Orlando, Florida. It's an easy 1 mile walk around Lake Eola so that anyone and everyone can participate. Plus, there'll be food and live entertainment. It'll be a fun event that we can do together to help raise money for Make-A-Wish. So come be part of the WDW Radio walking team. Get your shirt and register over at wwwradio.com/walkforwishes25. Don't forget that my audio walking tours of Walt Disney World are now available as a free podcast. Just search for WDW Audio Guide or Mongello in your favorite podcast player, and I will take you on an immersive, in-depth, guided walking tour of Walt Disney World, all in binaural audio with secrets, history, and fun facts. Be sure to check out the new official WDW Radio merchandise store for shirts, hats, hoodies, mugs, and more at wdwradio.com/merch. That's M-E-R-C-H. And you can now save 15% off your entire order by using code MARCH15. And that code is only good for the month of March. And remember, just because it's the end of the episode doesn't mean it's the end of the fun. Come join the community and conversation over in the clubhouse at www.com/clubhouse. Call the voicemail at 407-900-9391. Connect with me on social. I am at Lou Mangiello, and join me this and every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern for WW Radio Live. You can watch on the WW Radio channel on YouTube or on the WW Radio page or in the clubhouse on Facebook. And as much as I love connecting with you online, I still believe that nothing beats a handshake and a hug. So check out the updated events page over at www.com/events to find out about our next meet of the month in Walt Disney World, group cruises, Adventures by Disney, on the road events, and much, much more. And as always, the best way to keep updated is with my free weekly newsletter. There's no algorithms, nothing to check. I will deliver it right to your inbox every single Wednesday. Just go to www.com/subscribe. And as always, my friend, and you are my friend, whether we have met yet or not, all I ask is that if you like the show, please help spread the word, share the show, tell a friend. Remember to be kind, choose the good, have a great day, and even better tomorrow. So until next time, remember, the only way to achieve the impossible is to believe it is possible. It's from Alice in Wonderland, and I agree 100%. I love and appreciate you. So until next time, see ya.